Welcome to the Love Like a Mama podcast. I'm your host, Lila Harrison King, and my purpose is to help moms in any season of motherhood connect through the shared experience of parenting. Down in the trenches can be a lonely place, and when I realized moms need community, I wrote a book of encouragement and am now expanding that community to this weekly podcast. Remember, Mama, there's not one right way to mother, only a loving way. Let's get started. Today's episode is a little different. It's just me here talking to myself, but I wanted something a little bit different for Mother's Day. While the idea behind Mother's Day is a great one, and I love so many mothers that are a part of my life, Mother's Day itself is not really my favorite day of the year. Not even in the top 10, really. Mother's Day is a complicated day for a lot of people. For the women who wish they were moms but aren't and might never be. For the mom whose child has died. Or for the mom whose child is simply not with her for whatever reason. For the mom whose own mom has recently passed. For the birth mothers who still grieve, for the grown children who bear scars of loss or trauma, for those with difficult mother relationships, and plenty of other scenarios I probably have not even thought of. Please know that I am thinking of you today, and you are allowed to feel whatever you feel without pressure or obligation. That being said, I will be sharing the difficult story to my own motherhood. It talks about infertility. It talks about failed adoptions. It talks about adoption, motherhood, all of those topics. So if any of those things are something you're not in a place right now to deal with, please just skip over this episode. But if you do listen, I hope that it resonates with someone in some way, even if our experiences are completely different. So here goes. I sit in disbelief as my doctor gently touches my arm, looks me squarely in the eyes, and says, "It's time to look into other options. Surrogacy or adoption. Or maybe even a child-free life." I watch his mouth move and his words swirl around the room as my heart breaks into a million little pieces. All the while trying to figure out if what he is saying is actually true. I can't begin to fathom the meaning of these words in this moment or for my life. 3 years. 3 years of fertility treatments. 3 years of hoping and dreaming and praying and begging. 3 years of anticipation and disappointment hang here in this room. Just 6 years prior, I stood in a delivery room and watched my brother's girlfriend give birth. After hours of sweating and writhing and begging for it to be over, after the nurse announced, "There she is. Just one more push." A groan, a push, and suddenly, there she really was, a perfect new life. I watched as she held the baby to her chest, breathed in her scent, stroked her soft tuft of hair, and kissed her for the very first time. Love filled the room. I had never experienced anything quite like it before, and though I had always known I wanted to be a mother, this moment made it real. I wanted this for myself more than anything else. But instead of, "There she is," I was here in this dimly lit room being told, "There won't be."
I smile at my doctor, but I can't look him in the eye. Tears are swelling, and I know they will soon spill over. I leave the room and walk to my car in a fog, so surreal I can't even place my surroundings, feeling the weight of the air around me on my shoulders. I'm not sure what to do. What is the next step when you're told your biggest dream is not possible? The months afterward felt like no one understood the pain of losing that dream. Not my friends, not my family, not even my husband. I was alone. Sure, I walked through life, the motions of it at least, but most days I could barely muster up enough joy to make it through work with a smile on my face. And as if it was a planned attack, one by one, it seemed like all my coworkers started announcing pregnancies. After walking through life in a haze of loneliness, hoping the reality of our situation would change, and yet being unwilling to try something new, I began to ponder the idea of adoption. My husband, James, was fine with it being just the two of us. He would tell me my love for him was enough. But it wasn't for me, and I felt guilty that it wasn't. I needed a child. I needed little arms around my neck. I needed laughter and the patter of tiny feet running through the house. I needed to cheer a child on at soccer games and a little one to read bedtime stories with. I needed to be called Mama. I needed a legacy of our love to leave behind. And I needed it as much as I needed air to breathe. One night over dinner with my husband, I finally said it out loud. I need to get better to move on, and I need to be a mother. He looks at me, his eyebrows raised. I've been thinking about adoption, I say. It's beginning to pull me out of my loneliness, and I'm realizing that it's just a different path to motherhood. I can still be a mother, just not in the way I imagined. It was that shift in my thinking that began our journey to adoption. I wouldn't have a traditional labor. I had made peace with that. But I don't know that I could have ever prepared for what my labor would actually look like. Labor for adoptive parents begins with mounds of paperwork, numerous interviews, parenting classes, background checks, personal references, financial statements, and medical physicals, all to prepare you for your match. We completed it all, and the day came when we were finally matched with the birth mom. My labor went fast and furious. It was a mere 3 days later, we were driving 400 miles to pick up our baby girl. I keep looking at the car seat perched in the back. I was so excited that in just a few hours, it will hold a real live baby. My baby. I would get my moment to breathe in her scent, to hold her small body against mine, everything I had ever wished for. I daydreamed the entire way about my "there she is" moment that was about to come true. But after arriving at the hospital, our labor took a turn. We were informed that the birth mother had decided to parent her baby, a risk we knew was possible but never, ever expected. I picture her holding that baby girl, breathing in her scent, and knowing what I knew, that this moment and this relationship was everything. Heartbroken, we walked out to the car, the air around us again so surreal and heavy that we couldn't make sense of what had just happened. We drove home, stopping only once to buy more Kleenex because my tears just would not stop. I could not bear to look at the car seat now. It felt like it was mocking me. How foolish I was to get my hopes up,
to go there mentally and imagine holding her in my arms, to name her, to line up childcare, to dare dream that this could be my reality. Oh, I wanted to toss that car seat out of the car going 75 miles per hour down the interstate. But instead, I just cried. Once home, James focused on one task, packing up the bassinet in our bedroom. It was the only tangible thing he could fix. He needed to get it out of there. The year that followed that moment felt much like the year leading up to it. Dark, heavy, and lonely. But then, the day came, and we were matched again. With another birth mom, expecting a son this time. We meet her for lunch one day in a little diner and quickly discover that she and I have a lot in common. We even become friends and speak on the phone once a week. She calls after each doctor visit and fills me in on the details. One day she asked me, "Would it be too weird for you if I told you I want you to be in the delivery room when he's born?" My heart skips a beat. I've been secretly hoping she would ask me to be there, but I hadn't dared ask. As the due date approached, I shopped for all things blue and pulled the nursery together. We dusted off the bassinet and the car seat and settled on a name. We will call him Matthew. Those moments of anticipation are some of the greatest moments of my life, as most expecting mothers know. But then, the unimaginable. Just 2 weeks before the due date, the adoption agency calls. The birth mom has gone missing. My friend has gone missing. Matthew has gone missing. No one has been able to contact her. She's safe, that much they know. But she needs time to think things through. No one speaks the words. They didn't need to. A few days later, her sister calls to apologize. If a broken heart can break again in the same place, twice, or three times, or even more, that's what was happening now. I started avoiding people, going out of my way not to run into anyone, so I won't have to explain what happened. I couldn't even think about the loss of Matthew without crying, much less talk about it. At home, we kept the door to the nursery closed, but sometimes at night, after James was asleep, I would creep in to look at the empty rocking chair. The changing table with its unopened wipes and tiny little diapers. The dresser filled with baby boy outfits and soft socks. On occasion, I would pull the clothes out and hug them to me, breathing in their empty scent. One night, James catches me and says, as reassuringly as he can, "You know he wasn't our baby, right?" I nod, but I don't really know if I believe that yet. The tears are hot on my face. "She'll love him and take care of him," he says. "She is his mother." My tears spill even faster, even though I know he's right. I also know that I wanted to be that baby's mother. I'm not ready yet to say it wasn't meant to be, to move on, to quit grieving. But time continued on as it does, and after 7 months of grief and loneliness had passed, we began our labor again. We have been focusing on U.S. adoptions, but one day, I receive an email about an orphanage in Haiti. As I read, I begin to feel that we need to research this new possibility.
Adopting internationally will require us to redo some of our paperwork, have an addendum to our home study, and an interview with a psychiatrist. The government must also approve additional paperwork to secure a passport and visa for our adopted child. Despite the added work, we decide to go for it. We pass all the interviews and complete all the additional paperwork, and we are matched with a little girl who has just recently been brought to the orphanage. They email us a photo. Her soulful brown eyes have a familiar look of loneliness. Eyes that plead, "I need you to love me. I am scared. I am hurt. I am not sure how I got here." I realize she needs a family as much as we need a child. I've dreamed of my future daughter since I was 16. I imagined she would have my same shade of brown hair and maybe my blue eyes. I hoped she would love school like me and be funny and smart and strong. We would share a bond that only mothers and daughters do. I had no way of knowing that my daughter would grow inside another woman, that she would be born in Haiti, and that I would miss out on her first 3 years of life. And yet, I knew she was mine. Grasping the bag next to me on the seat, I watch as our driver continues to weave through traffic, yelling in Creole. My stomach flutters. What if she doesn't like me? What if she's too scared to come to me? What if this wasn't the right decision? What if I lose another one? I don't have long to ponder my questions, because suddenly we're pulling up at a gate. The driver honks and two armed guards with sawed-off shotguns let us in. After settling in at the guest house, we walk across the street to the home of the orphanage director, who greets us with bonjour and hugs and kisses. Small talk commences, but all I can think is, how much longer? My husband and I stand on the porch waiting for the nanny to walk with our daughter from the orphanage 2 or 3 blocks away. It is probably only a matter of minutes, but it feels like hours as we wait to see her face. Wait to imagine if she is really coming or if our dream will once again be ripped away. Sweat beads on my forehead. I am not acclimating well to the Haitian humidity. I look at the unfamiliar abundance of exotic, lush green plants surrounding the porch. I notice a tree in the courtyard with big clusters of bright pink flowers and wonder if my daughter's favorite color is pink. James reaches for my hand and smiles, sensing my anxiety. Just then, the director looks up, points her eyes toward the gate, and says, "There she is." I turn my head as the gate opens, and I see her. My baby. For the very first time. She is tiny and even more beautiful than her picture. Is this real? Can this child really be mine? And then I notice her sundress is the exact shade of the pink flowers in the tree. She comes towards us, and as the nanny releases her hand, there on the porch, I hold my daughter for the first time. I breathe in her soft baby powder scent. I stroke her thick, coarse hair, twirling the braids around my finger. I notice a scar on her leg as I try to memorize every inch of her. I count all 10 fingers and all 10 toes. I press her little body against me and look into her soulful brown eyes. Here she is, the daughter I dreamed of all those years, despite the fact that she doesn't look like the daughter I imagined. I look at James, this warmth washing over us. It is the same feeling that was in the delivery room when my niece was born. The feeling that accompanied her arrival all those years ago is right here in this moment as well. It was the same. It was love. It was the moment a child is welcomed and the moment a woman becomes a mother. You see, fertility does not occur in the womb. It occurs in a resilient heart, a heart that never stops searching for love and togetherness, a heart that seeks its way through the heavy walks of life, out of loneliness and despair, to breathe in the miraculous scent of connection and family. Oh, and in addition to this dream of a daughter coming true, there were also two sons, more than my arms could hold at one time. And that's the thing about dreams when we chase them relentlessly. The reality is usually bigger than what we ever imagined. So whether your dream is to become a mother or your dream is an entirely different labor of love, I hope that when disappointment strikes, you remember, like me, those dreams take all kinds of shapes you never expected. And that, like me, if you continue to reach inside your own resilient heart, your empty rooms will be occupied, your seats will be filled, and you will hear the words you've been longing to hear. There he is. There she is. There you are.
Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like more, you can find my website and my blog at lilaharrisonking.com. I also have a Facebook page with Motherhood Encouragement. Just look it up under Lila Harrison King. And if Instagram is more your preference, you can find me there under the handle Love Like a Mama. Friends, be sure and share the podcast with the moms in your life. Leave me a review and continue to always love like a mama.